Hello and welcome to the Library Coven, a bi-weekly podcast in which two bookish besties discuss mostly YA fantasy through the lens of intersectional feminist criticism. Why? Because talking about books is pretty magical.
I'm Jessie.
And I'm Kelly.
Oh, and in this episode, I just like spaced out. Okay, in this episode, we're discussing I Feed Her to the Beast and the Beast is Me by Jameson Shea. It tells the story of Lore. She's been working super hard, putting her body on the line in the process at the Ballet Academy of Paris, a world filled with seemingly innocent white girls in pink tutus. But the world of ballet is cutthroat and there's no space for a black ballerina. So when Lore gives a piece of herself to Acheron, she's able to make others do her bidding. But when others who've sold pieces of themselves start dying, Laura is sure she's next and tries to keep up with her ballet while trying to figure out who's hunting them down. Chaos ensues as white privilege rears its head once again.
Once more. That familiar villain.
yes.
Excellent summary. Before we get into initial reactions and the rest of the show, we have a wee announcement for you all. That we are coming to the end of the Library Coven. We are wrapping things up. This is the penultimate episode. A Tempest of Tea will be our final show for you all. We've been doing this for 6 years almost and have well over 100 episodes if you count all of the bonus bake-off and end-of-year things that we've done. Almost 100 book episodes. I think it'll be 97 books at the end of it all, which is like... With long form reviews, I'm proud of us. I think that's great. This is like a happy ending. This is our HEA. We're, you know, doing other things. But yeah, we just wanted to let you all know and say thank you for being here on this journey with us. If you're new to the show and this is, or maybe this is sad, but it's happy sad. And you can go back through our whole catalog, which will remain up for a while.
Yeah, you'll have lots of opportunities to continue listening. All right, should we talk about I Feed Her to the Beast and the Beast is Me?
Let's do it. Initial reactions.
I listened to the audiobook, which was narrated by Crystalyn Lloyd, and holy shit, I give this book 5 out of 5 stars. I listened to this in just a few settings because I had to know what was happening next. It's horror, which isn't usually my jam. I am very prone to nightmares, but the writing was like impeccable. It was so lyrical. The characters were fully fleshed out, and Shea did a fantastic job of really encapsulating what it means to be a black person in white spaces and the rage that we tamp down to survive. And I just loved every second of it. Like, chef's kiss.
It was so good. I could not agree more. I also listened to the audiobook, which was so well narrated by Crystalyn Lloyd, and like the characters are complex. There's plenty of plot twists. The world building is just like super vibrant, like transportive, takes you there. The impeccably crafted MC and her voice, just like all the accolades, all of the stars. Yeah, I really loved this book. I thought it was excellent. All right, recommend if you like.
I forgot to put the author's name in here, but Ace of Spades.
I just looked it up. It's by Farida Abike Iyemide. Sorry, I totally butchered that. My bad.
I mean, you probably know what the accent marks mean better than I do, so had to pronounce them.
We'll put it in the show notes so that you can not take our word for it.
Yeah. So I would recommend that book. I would also recommend Get Out, like the movie, I think written and directed by Jordan Peele. And Black Swan, which I've never seen, but this book was compared to it in like a lot of the reviews because it's a movie about ballet. So I think it probably fits. Other reviewers said so. So I'm adding it in here.
Yeah, I definitely think those are excellent, excellent recs. And yeah, Black Swan makes sense because it's like a psychological thriller and we see the MC getting more and more unhinged as the story goes on. But we're like kind of rooting for her at the same time. So
okay,
we love it. I also put, I believe it's called Tiny Pretty Things by Danielle Clayton. And there was a TV show adaptation, just like cutthroat world of ballet, elite ballet. Someone dies, murder mystery, you know, chaos ensues.
As it does.
Why did we choose this book?
I think it was just vibes. I got an advanced listener copy from Libro FM, so thank you for that. So I just feel like I should mention that. But yeah, I think just vibes. And we actually haven't done any or much horror, especially like we've read books that had like horror elements maybe, but not books that were just like, you know, strictly horror. So I really like the book. And there's going to be a sequel, which I'm also excited to listen to when it comes out.
Oh, really? That's exciting.
Yeah, I was looking up Jameson Shea and I was like, what else have they written? I need to know. Like, I need to read everything they've ever So yeah, there will be a sequel. Very excited.
And I also did a little author research rabbit hole, and yeah, they're like a performer. Which is so cool. I'm like, yes, amazing.
Time to talk world building and through the wardrobe. I feel like I wrote so many notes this week. I'm so sorry.
You really did. They're excellent. No apologies. It's great.
So this book takes place in Paris, kind of like in our modern day world. And I don't think we've ever read a book that takes place there before.
Mm-mm, I don't think so.
We don't actually see like a lot of the city, but we do see the catacombs because that's kind of where like Acheron/Elysium is. And apparently the catacombs are super creepy, and people trying to sneak into them, into parts that aren't like part of official tours. And it's super dangerous. People get murdered down there. So
what?
Apparently people live down there and they are not welcoming to people who don't. So don't go into the unofficial parts. And also they're not like stabilized. I saw some person who lived in Paris talking about it on TikTok, but they don't have like all the fortification that the parts that are open to tourists have. So they are prone to cave in. So don't try and sneak in there. You could die.
That would be a cool tour to do though. If you were in Paris, that would be so cool.
I don't think I could do it.
You would never.
I'm too claustrophobic. No.
Oh, claustrophobia. No, that wouldn't be. Mm-hmm. That wouldn't be the place for you then.
The magical and horrifying world of ballet was captured so well. Like, we get descriptions of ballerinas leaving rehearsals battered and bruised, losing toenails from dancing on point, but also ballerinas themselves are like beautiful on the outside in a way that the world like expects these prim and proper white girls to be. But then they're like wishing death on each other, picking each other's bodies apart and putting like thumbtacks and razor blades in each other's shoes just for the sake of being the one who gets noticed. And it was just like, oh my God, like I cannot even believe. Jameson Shea didn't say anything about them doing ballet, but I'm just like, if this is how it looks like in this book, and then like Black Swan also seemed to be like similar vibes, I'm like, man, I cannot imagine trying to be a professional ballerina. Like, that's wild.
Yeah, you're totally right. Just like truly stunning depictions of like ballet almost as its own unique genre of body horror.
Yes.
In addition to like its own unique genre of like mental and emotional horror/torment. What these people have to put themselves through for this art form is truly like outrageous, and all the more respect. Yeah, I just thought like the descriptions too of like the body movements and like the somatic feeling of, you know, doing all your different moves and stuff like that. I just thought like this totally felt like an insider's perspective, like someone who had an intimate knowledge of this art form and like the world. So either this person knows from firsthand experience or they are so good at doing research and field research that they like, you wouldn't be able to tell that this person didn't have like firsthand knowledge. That was truly bananas. And I knew it was like hostile territory over there in elite ballet world, but this like made it even more visceral for me. Like, oh my God, the friggin' razor blades and stuff in the shoes. Oh, the drama. It's next level.
It's wild. And it's funny because like I knew that it took a toll on your body. Like, I had some friends who did ballet in high school and they had been doing it since they were kids, and like their feet were like absolutely destroyed. I mean, like, they were very confident. They would continue to wear sandals in the summertime. And like, it couldn't be me, like just blistering alone. I can't imagine like getting dust and dirt in that. But like, yeah, I would love to watch some like interviews of Jameson Shea or listen to them, because I just wonder like how they got all this information. Like, if this was something they did when they were younger, because it's wild.
Let's discuss all things magic.
So there's this like river/being, Acheron, who Lore makes a bargain with to have the power of a god. And that turns into Lore being able to control people. But we see that Acheron grants different things to different people. So like Josephine has extra luck. Cero has accumulated wealth. And Anders made like 4 bargains. So he can do a few different things. One, he was made beautiful and able to create beautiful things. He can travel like in space, like reappear somewhere else, and some other stuff that I'm definitely forgetting, because Ander wasn't that interesting of a character to me, but like he kind of sticks out as like the most magical being that we see physically, because, you know, like he's there in the world and not just like a voice in Lore's mind. So very interesting kind of idea about magic.
And it's like a river of blood, right? Mm-hmm. That's down. And then people have to like give like a blood offering to it. And Lore like actually goes in all the way, which is like maybe one of the reasons why she's so powerful. She does multiple bargains too, doesn't she? She does like a first one and then a second one, I think.
Yeah, but I don't remember how the second one was much different from the first one. I couldn't remember if it like just extended the first one or something.
I think so. I think she bargained for like, she got like 3 days at the first one and then like got 3 months or 3 weeks or something of extra power in the second one. I can't remember. But this was like such a cool take on the whole Faustian bargain, aka deal with a devil trope. I'd never seen it done like this before, like in ballet. I thought that was really cool. And I really felt like the high stakes for the characters, and I believed in their desperation. Like it made sense to me that they would, you know, be in such a state that they wanted to get this power from like this otherworldly being, no matter the cost, like they were ready. Yeah. Is there anything you'd make a deal for?
That's a hard question, because like it kind of turned out by the end of the book, like this Acheron being whatever, it doesn't actually seem like that bad. like he's not the bad guy really, or they are not the bad guy really. I don't know. I'd probably use it for something like huge, like world peace or something, because like I feel like there's like nothing I could get for myself that would be important enough to like sell my soul for, like personally. And like world peace is not like a good example. Like I would probably pick something much more specific like that than that, like, you know, to like say Palestine right. Or something like that, because I'm just like, nothing personally for me is like big enough to like sell my soul for, as like, you know, like I want to finish my PhD or like, you know, whatever, but right. Something like, yeah, huge, yeah. But like Lore is also young, and like so are all these other people when they're making these bargains. And I do think when you're young, like the wider world doesn't feel like as big as it does when you're older. At least that's been my experience. Like I think it's different now with like social media and stuff, but like it was easy when we were younger to like kind of not know about things going on in the world. And I think that's just like not possible as an adult, or maybe in this time. Yeah, that's super not selfish of me, but I'm like, I don't know.
It's an excellent answer. And yeah, I'm glad that you brought in the like closedness of the world for these characters. A, their age, and B, it's like kind of a cult.
Yeah.
High key, a cult, you mm-hmm. know, where it's like super like cultures of control, and like it doesn't feel like there's any possibility outside of it. Like your identity is totally pinned on this like one microcosm, and you know, you're super attached to the outcomes. So yeah, it makes sense that like why these characters did what they did, and yeah, also save Palestine. So, and the occupation.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I also think like for these 4 characters that I think it's 4 or so of them, like Lore, Cero, Josephine, and then there's another girl whose name I can't remember. But like all of them, like you mentioned, are like very desperate for something like that they feel like they can't live without at that current time. And I think that makes like a big difference to them, like doing things for themselves, because like you said, like they're like encapsulated in this specific space time. And so like, yeah, the desperation, like you said, is just like huge. And as an adult, that's just not like at this current place in my mind, that's just like not there for me.
I'm glad you're not selling your soul to the devil to finish your PhD, because you're going to do that anyway with yeah. Fine colors, I'm sure.
Thank you. Thank you. And I'm already selling my time in my youth. So
you already did it.
Yeah. So we also have like Acheron is this river, but like is also this entity that gives Lore her power. But it's also like the river of woe in Greek mythology, which makes sense, seeing as it only grants powers to people who deserve it. So like Coralie has never faced any adversity in her entire fucking life. And Acheron like refuses to grant her any powers. And I really like this aspect. And that's when I'm like, oh, maybe Acheron's not bad.
Mm-hmm. It's, you know, it seems like a discerning entity where it's like, mm-hmm. No, Coralie is not worthy. And so where Coralie does end up getting her power is from Lethe, which is a different river in Greek mythology, the river of forgetfulness and oblivion. And that's what Coralie binds herself to. You know, I appreciated the decisions of making it like a super white, like literally the color white power, and about how it's like just like empties things of their, I don't know, vitality and meaning. And I just thought it kind of maps nicely onto like white supremacy and like how they want to like retconning history, you know, and like forgetting what actually happened. And so I think that there's like some metaphorical like stretches, some leaps that you can take that also make it an interesting correlation.
Now we're going to talk about conflict, villains, and good versus evil, and get me Kylo Ren. So there were like so many this time. I'd say that like Coralie is like the biggest culprit, like physically manifested villain, but we don't really realize that till much later in the book. But it's like peak white rich privilege going on with her. She thinks she deserves things because she wants them, even if she doesn't like work hard for them. And it becomes very apparent that she looks down on Lore. Coralie can't stand that a black girl, especially a poor black girl, got something that Coralie wanted for herself. And I was just like, yeah, that sounds about white.
Sounds about white.
So I was like, yeah. So I was just like, oh yeah, yeah, yeah. This all tracks.
It really does. Yeah. I wish I could say I was like super surprised that she turned out bad, but I was not that surprised. Maybe I didn't see it coming from like the very beginning, but like it does, they do tease it, you know, throughout where like Coralie's like losing her vitality and like looking more and more like, ooh, that girl needs some sleep and to like eat a hamburger or whatever, and
probably wash her legs. That means shower, but yeah.
Yeah, and just like peak entitlement, ignorance, all that stuff.
Racism in institutions for sure. Something I really liked about this book is that Lore comes to realize that it's not necessarily like ballet that is the problem, but like the institutions, like the Ballet Academy of Paris, that institute these power structures and rules. For Lore, the answer isn't getting rid of ballet, but to burn down the institutions that create this like these like made up rules. And I just found this very interesting because I think sometimes we talk about something as being like inherently bad when it's like, oh well, that thing's not inherently bad, the people who are in charge of the thing are bad. So I feel like this is a take I haven't really seen before, and so this was like really like refreshing to see. Yeah, it was just like I didn't expect it, and you know, I thought Lore would like completely turn away from dance and ballet and all that, so I just thought this was really interesting and like a new take on what it means for there to be like institutionalized problems with something, but the thing is not bad.
And I was like impressed about how Shay renders this with like a series of like hyper realistic scenes in this like horror / fantasy novel, and then taken together all of it comes to paint like a pretty damning picture of the elite ballet world and how it's been constructed. And yeah, it makes sense that it's like super inaccessible and yeah, super like scarcity mindset, cutthroat, and yeah, because like look at the people who've made the institution, you know, they're coming with their own baggage, and clearly like it's going to be a reflection of the people who made it, right? All right, onward, magical friends. Just as one does not simply walk into Mordor, one does not simply read fantasy without talking about the stuff that we're going to talk about, mostly race and class. And this is our segment about power and bodies and how they relate.
Race plays a huge role in this story. Every race / ethnicity is described, but also it really highlights the lack of diversity in ballet. We see this in the story in that Lore is the only black ballerina in the academy, and the book touches on some things I've heard black ballerinas talk about before. So like not being able to find shoes and their skin tones because white is seen as the default. So they end up having to use makeup to dye their shoes. And this has to do with like the point of ballet shoes, which are supposed to be like an extension of your body. So they're pink because, you know, like white people are pale. So there's an Instagram account I follow called Blacks in Ballet. And I would highly recommend following if you're interested in seeing black folks in ballet. But we also see like the everyday racism that Laura encounters. People think she's like a diversity hire. Other dancers don't hang out with her. And she's working twice as hard just to get the same amount of notice as other dancers, or sometimes to not even get the same amount of notice. We also see that many people she interacts with think she's American because she's Black, as if Black people aren't from everywhere, which I found very funny.
Yep.
So like people would assume she speaks English, like those kinds of things. So yeah, there was just like racism everywhere. And it was just really interesting to see it within the context of ballet, because I don't think it's an art form that is often associated with Black people, but like the Black and Ballet Instagram account just like really brings me so much joy. And I follow lots of ballerinas on TikTok and stuff, but it's fun to watch and just to see like a diverse range of people doing things, because like it's not just for white people.
Mm-hmm. And you dabbled in ballet, right?
Yeah, I did ballet as a kid. Like I grew up in an area that was much more diverse than like where I live now. So there were other like people of color in the classes, but I like did ballet over this past summer, just like at my local like community center. I was the only person of color, other than the teacher actually, who was a person of color and a man. So he's like just defying all the stereotypes. But yeah, so it's something that I really enjoy and I really enjoy watching, but yeah, there's some race problems for sure.
Mm-hmm. Totally. Yeah, this is almost like it's not a separate point because like the race and class are so intimately connected. Mm-hmm. But like the rich people were all white from what I could tell. And they were really just like telling on themselves with their truly outrageous entitlement and ignorance and their bad behavior. And I was like, oh my gosh, clearly these people don't know what self-reflection is. They have just get defensive. They don't have a growth mindset. You know, they're very, you know, attached to the status quo and want things to stay as they always have been, even if that means like disregarding the like truly amazing like excellence that was Lore and / our, you know, Black ballerinas everywhere. Yeah, I thought that this was like a very realistic part of the story, not magical at all.
Yeah. Well, and like to that point, Lore kind of talks about like pickpocketing people to have money to buy like new point shoes or like, you know, their leotards or all that kind of stuff. And ballet is actually really expensive if you're doing it like at a ballet school. It's one of the reasons I stopped doing ballet. It just became too expensive like for my family. But like all the other girls that are in ballet and boys, like, you know, there's a wide range of people doing ballet. Like all of them are super rich, and that means they are able to like stay in these like low paying ballet jobs and like, you know, buy all the things and equipment that they need without any issues. So like Laura's not just Black, she's also poor, and that also like is another barrier for her.
Mm-hmm. Not to mention, yeah, like tuition and point shoes don't last forever, right? Don't you need like new pairs all the time?
Yeah.
I was learning so much about like the materiality of ballet and how much equipment is needed and how like everyone's trying to have the best leotard and designer this and I don't know, the best that. And yeah, it gets to the point about how like class inaccessible it is for sure. And also, like, steal from those rich-ass people in the Opera Garnier. Like,
oh, yeah.
Yes, pick their pockets. They're not even going to care. They're not going to miss their watch because they have 12 others at home. Like, yes.
Yeah.
Robin Hood all the way.
Yeah, or Laura, like, going to the, like, woman in, like, HR or whatever and making them, like, change her pay. That part I loved. I was like, oh, yeah, do that for sure. They're not, ballerinas are not rich.
That was incredible. Oh, yeah, I guess that, like, yeah, we didn't really talk about Lore being able to like impose her will on other people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, how like cathartic it would be. And just some of the scenes where she like makes Coralie's shitty like workaholic dad like drop his phone in his water glass or whatever when they were at a fancy restaurant. And I'm like, oh, yes, this would be so cool to be able to interrupt people in their like trodden pathways in that way.
Finally, it's time for Shipwrecked, a segment about asexuality, sexuality, sex, romance, and relationships. And sometimes we take liberties and do some shipping of our own. So Lore and Ander are like the main ship, but I think the romance element is like not really a big part of the story like it is in other YA novels. Like they could have actually just been friends. And I actually saw like a report from like NPR about how like young people like Gen Z right now, they don't want as much like sex and romance in their stories. Like they would prefer friendship instead. Like they feel that there's like not as much focus on friendship. So I think like this Lauren Ander part kind of could have been taken out, even though like I give it 5 stars, like this is great. And I'm excited to see like what happens with them in the next book. But it wasn't like, I wasn't like, oh my God, I'm so glad they're together. I was just kind of like, y'all could have just been friends.
Mm-hmm. Totally. I've seen that too about Gen Z and yeah, just like the, you know, the recent COVID experiences and their formative years. So like physical isolation, alienation, people are more politicized than ever. You know, realizing that like maybe relationship heteronormative relationship escalator isn't like, you know, the be all end all of existence. Right. And I thought that like, yeah, they could have easily been friends. And this, you know, yeah, I agree with you that it's like not enough of a like fault. It's like I'm not faulting the author for this, you know, just because it's like very, this is like a very common thing for a YA book. But to me, it didn't. Maybe it didn't fit as well with Laura's character just because she, although like she wants affection and stuff, yeah. And that's totally fine to have like multiple faces and different needs. But yeah, this was, I think, maybe one of the weaker parts of the story in my perspective. I would say that Lauren Ballet is my ship.
I respect
that's
that.
What she loves. And, you know, she's like frigging amazing at it and clearly has sacrificed so much to get where she is. So yeah, that's the ship I'm on for this book.
It's a good ship. We also have Lauren Coralie, who we mentioned earlier, our best friends. But Coralie is like obscenely wealthy. And it becomes very apparent that Coralie feels her wealth and her background means she deserves certain things. And that if Laura has them instead, then Laura should give them up for Coralie to have what she like, quote unquote, deserves because of her wealth and status. I've seen some people kind of talk about this before, about like friendships that are like not even for like socioeconomic status and like the difficulties of that. And I think that kind of plays out here with Lauren Coralie, like the difficulties of that, I guess, because like the person with less income or whatever, like maybe can't do as many things as the person with higher income, and that can like put strains on relationships. So this was just like an interesting aspect that I don't think we see super often in books that was like really nice to see.
Well, and like Coralie's mom is literally the principal of the school, yeah. Or whatever, the head of the school. Mm-hmm. And yeah, just like so many, yeah, stratifications, I guess, but between them, because like Coralie can't check herself basically. And yeah, it's like frustrating that like, yeah, Lore, the black woman, has to report or has to like do the emotional labor of like coddling her rich white friend's emotions. And Coralie's like not, we see how she's like not able to show up or for Lore when Lore is having problems and just like is dismissive, I guess, of things that go on. And it just seems like Lore has to like censor herself a lot of the time and like can't be her full self with Coralie because yeah, she wouldn't be accepted or, you know, loved as she is because Coralie's not capable of it at this point or probably ever.
Well, she's dead now.
So she's definitely maybe in another life. All right, now we're going to talk about writing style, narration, characterization, plot structure, basically whatever else comes to mind in Kill Your Darlings.
Something I really appreciated about this book is Lore as a depiction of both the invisibility and hypervisibility of blackness and white spaces. She's seen as hypervisible if she's included in a dance. She's like extra noticeable in a crowd of white faces on stage, but then she becomes invisible off stage where she should be getting better parts in the dances because she's so good. But people absolutely ignore her in the name of falling in with the status quo of what they think ballet is supposed to look like. And I just love seeing Lore let go and embrace her rage around how she was and is treated. Shay mentions at the start of the book that this is a story about rage, and they did an amazing job showing how Lore put up with so much for such a long time. And like Lore would try to take the high road and when others would treat her horribly, and she can only take that for so long until there was no other choice but to like unleash herself. And like, it was just magnificent. Like this book was just so good, but I just really appreciated this aspect, like showing that duality of what it means to be a black person in a white space. So yeah, that's all. Kill Your Darlings, I guess.
That's such an excellent point. Oh no, my headphone fell out. Yeah, such an excellent point. I'm so glad you brought it up. It's like 100% true and like rendered super well in this book. And yeah, I'm glad that you used the word magnificent because it truly was. Like, I was just like completely captivated by Lore and her like unraveling is like maybe the wrong word. She's just like, yeah, you said unleash. She's like no longer holding back. And she's like, I have power and I'm going to use it. And it was just like a beautiful thing to witness. Like, yes. I was really impressed by the writing in this book. It did not read as like a first book to me.
Not at all.
It was like honestly really, really well done. I thought the body horror scenes were like exquisitely grotesque. So good. Lore's voice and arc just like enthralling. Could not get enough. Magnificent, like you said. I would watch her tear down any and all shitty institutions like all day. Like just hire her as a consultant to like break the wheel in so many other places. One of the things that really stood out to me is like Lore has these intrusive thoughts and Shay just captured the like violent intrusive thoughts so vividly. Like what would happen if, you know, this person fell off the stage and like broke their tibia and it was sticking out of their leg. Lore just like her thoughts were just captured so well by the author. And yeah, I just all the accolades, like it was really good.
Yeah.
And just like the cover. Like, stop, so perfect. The radiant black girl, like, river of blood, skulls. So good. Just, like, all the vibes. Like you said at the beginning, just vibes.
Just vibes.
All right, real talk. Before we end, let's... Jesse brought something to the table today.
It might be the last time. So Paris is so often romanticized, including by like Black Americans, because there were plenty of like Black folks that moved to France after World War II, probably most famously James Baldwin. And I think even Ta-Nehisi Coates lived there for a while, like, you know, modern day writer. And there's always this idea that Black people are treated so much better there. But it was interesting to see this underbelly of Paris as a place that actually has many of the same problems of the U.S. And I think this is a particularly like salient at this time when there's so much anti-Muslim rhetoric and laws that are in place there. So like, it's not this idyllic place where everyone lives in harmony with one another. Like it's not Emily in Paris. I guess it is, but it's also not. So it was like really cool to see this city that we romanticize, especially as Black people, and see it be like, it might not be better.
Yeah, that the racism and xenophobia is there. And, you know, it has like a different flavor in history, obviously. But like, yeah. France is also a colonial power. So all of that gorgeous architecture came from exploitation of colonized people, Black people, like, you know, South Asian people, et cetera, et cetera. So,
yeah, especially Middle Eastern and North African people. So, yeah, it's just wild.
Yeah, there's like, you can't wear a hijab. A burqa and stuff like that. And different, maybe a different flavor of racism, like trying to like pretend that it's like all secular and perfect. Maybe they don't have the like Christian right wing baggage, but that is also like coming up, you know, on the right in France currently. But yeah, you're right. It's definitely can have this like veneer.
Mm-hmm. And God forbid you're like a Black Muslim. Like,
exactly. Then you've got like multiple strikes against you, you know, in that situation.
Are you ready for card questions?
I did. I got them out. I was so prepared this time. Does the main character lose or gain power?
Oh, gain 100%.
And it's glorious. Oh, glorious.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Did the author create believable characters? Totally.
Surprisingly so. Especially like Ander was like a bit of a surprise to me. Like, I keep picturing him. Oh, what is that? I think there's like a Fall Out Boy music video with a man with like antlers. Like, is that? It might be a different music video.
I think that's the music video for Sugar We're Going Down, which is like, man,
which just
that's a throwback.
Aged me so much. But for some reason, I pictured Ander like that.
Because he does like, he is like a beast or something, right? He's like multi-formed. He's got other things going on physically, but like not always, like not when he's in the real world, like when he's in underground or whatever, right?
Elysium. Yeah.
I was also kind of like picturing Tamlin when he's in his beast form too.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. Okay.
But yeah.
Wait, what was the question?
Did the author create believable characters? And here we are talking about like fantastical things. I thought especially the like rich white garbage was particularly believable.
Yeah, for sure.
How does this book fit with the author's whole body of work?
It's their first, and I'm like, how do you top this?
Just from the like little bit of research that I did, I thought it was, it definitely fits with like, this person is a performer. They understand the art world and what it takes to like make it in that sort of business, and how, yeah, you really do have to be like adaptable and cutthroat maybe sometimes.
Yeah. And like I mentioned earlier, there will be a sequel, but I do feel like the story could stand on its own as it currently is. Like, it's great that there's a sequel. I'm excited to see more of Lore and like explore this relationship with Ander and her like little group of friends or whatever. But like, if you're just wanting like a one-off book, like you could just read this by itself, and it feels very wrapped up to me.
Agreed. Agreed. One more question.
Let's do it.
How would you summarize the story?
Okay, well, I already did that at the beginning.
You already did that. That's a bad one. Okay, let's try. Let's try again. This is also a silly question. Does the story begin well? What does that even mean? Like, it draws me in, so sure.
Yeah, because sometimes you like, you know, you start a book and you're like, God, this is boring.
I'm 50 pages in and I'm like, ugh, what's going
DNF.
On? DNF. DNF. So in that case, then yes, it did end. It did. It started well, it continued well, and it ended well.
Yeah. Thanks for listening to The Library Coven. We'll be back in 2 weeks for a discussion of Tempest of Tea by Hafsa Faisal. As always, we'd love to be in conversation with you all. Let us know what you think of the episode, anything we miss, or just say hi by dropping a line in the comments or by reaching out to us on Instagram at The Library Coven.
And we should say that because we're winding down the show, that things are going to be way less active on Jesse on Instagram. And if you reach out to us on Gmail, it might take a long time for us to respond. So yeah, you can subscribe on the podcast app of your choice. And we'd appreciate if you'd rate and review the show and spread the word, because there's probably other people that could benefit from our 100 plus episode catalog. And if you are able to support our labor financially, you can make a one-time donation to us on Ko-fi. That's still up. And Patreon will eventually be closed down. So I think May might be the last month that we do it. So yeah, thank you so much to those of you who have supported us already. Hey, patrons. And yeah, there's also our bookshop.org affiliate page. Until next time, stay magical.